Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Alrighty, you're not going to get the typical LG for me to start off a show because it's simple. There's not a whole lot to celebrate other than this. This in the background, if you're listening via podcast, I don't care. I'll explain it. It's Tiger Stadium at night. We're going to get it done versus Texas A&M this weekend. You guys know the stat that we always like to share. It's so hard to go back-to-back on the road in the SEC and win both games. A&M went on the road versus Arkansas. Now they have to go to Baton Rouge. So if you're going to the game, bring it this Saturday night. And, of course, the big question, will Brian Kelly make some staff changes? I do think some heads could roll, no matter the result, after the Texas A&M game on Saturday. It would make a lot of sense because you're going into a bye week, and that's going to give you a little bit more time to reshuffle the deck, if you will. It's also important to know that when it comes to recruiting, you don't want to make a mistake that Billy Napier made, which was he fired a bunch of coaches like right before signing day began, and he lost a bunch of key signatures, and a lot of those players that he actually lost via those signatures went on to be good players somewhere else. So you have to factor so many different things in when it comes to making changes on your staff. I do think if I were to poll most of you, that you would probably rank the importance of staff changes as the following. Number one, Joe Sloan. Number two, Brad Davis. And then after that, probably a mixture of Cortez Hankton and maybe someone else. But I think those two, more than Hankton, are guys that you want out the door at LSU. And look, I had a guest lined up for tonight. He canceled. So instead of getting another guest, you're going to be the guest tonight. I'm serious. I might send you guys an invite link if you want to put your face, because if you want to put your face on camera, because I want to be an open book. We had a guest this last weekend on Sunday. Blake is normal Sunday slot with us. I'll be on with him a little bit later. I want to be as open as I possibly can for you guys, the fans, the guys that put a lot of money, time, and effort not only into this program, but into my channel. Okay, so I am your sounding board. You're not going to get the same kind of energy from me tonight. I feel like, and look, whether an LSU podcast or whatever say the following, if you are a true LSU fan, you're always going to be uncomfortable when you talk poorly about a player in particular. I am always a little bit more comfortable talking about a coach because those are truly full-grown adults compared to players. And coaches, of course, used to make way more than the players do. But now, of course, it's a little bit different in this day and age. So, look, I hate calling for heads to be rolled. You speak to coaches and staffers and so on and so on. But when you're in this spot, you got to be honest about some things, okay? Now, what about Brian Kelly? A lot of you are probably like, Carter, I don't want to talk about assistant coaches being fired. I want to talk about the coaches that could be looking for a new job some other day. I want to talk about Brian Kelly losing his job. So I'll talk about it. Do I think the boosters and the powers that be at LSU could fire Brian Kelly and actually pay up to move on? Yes, for two reasons. Number one, LSU, it's always been known they don't have the deepest pockets. They don't have the pockets of someone like Texas A&M or Oregon or whatever. But money can be found. It's not really that big of a mystery that there are billionaires that support LSU in a major way. And I'm not talking about Todd Graves. There are Silicon Valley billionaires that support LSU. And there's not many billionaires that are walking. You can do the research for yourself. So, yeah, I mean, you could find the money. And I'm looking at you. We'll look at the chat here in a second. You could find the money to get it done. Because in college football, your head coach is everything. If you look at any team and any program in college football, the order of importance is always the following. Your head coach, your quarterback for that season, OC, then DC. Those are always the four big tenets of your program. And normally number five is, and every team has one of these, that superstar player that doesn't play quarterback. So a guy like Mansoor Delane is in that next tier. But those four are always the biggest. And up to this point in the season, those four, outside of Blake Baker in some games, have not lived up to the standard to where we can win a national championship, much less make the college football playoff. Now, what do you do about that? How do you change it? Do you need to make the biggest change of all, which is moving on from the head coach? And the truth is, you have to consider it. Everything needs to be considered at this point. Now, I think the more important question for Scott Woodward, does Brian Kelly have it in him to find the offensive coordinator we need for this program to be successful? And the answer to that is probably yes. A lot of bad coaches or worse coaches than Brian Kelly have found that magical offensive coordinator that really gets the ball rolling. Sometimes it could be via a connection to the program that that assistant already had, or it could be someone that Brian Kelly knows that would come in and implement a better system than what we have now. But can you trust Brian Kelly to make that coordinator decision? And the answer for me is probably not. Because if you were to truly evaluate the coordinator hires that Brian Kelly has made, he's probably batted 50%, maybe a little bit less than that. You know, one of the coordinators, of course, was Mike Dimbrock. That was a previous connection. All right. Obviously, Mike Dimbrock was phenomenal here, and he is phenomenal at Notre Dame. And we can get into what actually happened with him leaving. Okay. The second thing is, what about Joe Sloan? Has he been a success? No, he's not been a success. And then, of course, you get into Matt House. That was not a success. I was very vocal about that at the time. And then we get into Blake Baker. Okay, so Blake Baker, of course, has been mostly good at LSU, in my opinion. But now it's gone rancid. And we'll talk about one of the craziest decisions I've ever seen an LSU defense coordinator make. And I am not the only film study analyst that is bringing this up. Okay, now here's the next thing. As far as hiring an offensive coordinator that can get us going, you can do it. You can do it. You could still do it, even though I am very skeptical of that. And if I were to go through what the most likely scenario that would happen to LSU this offseason Brian Kelly keeps his job and we clean house on the offensive side of the football and find someone along those lines to take our offense to the next level. That's why I think it's going to happen. But we don't know. We don't know. That's what I think is going to happen. Maybe you do end up losing Brian Kelly in the middle of all this. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. Okay? We're going to get to some of your comments before I get into a few thoughts on Texas A&M. Obviously, as you do know, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. we go live. The Tuesday live stream is normally a macro look at LSU football and still a recap from the previous week's game. The Wednesday live stream is normally guest-driven, and then Thursday live streams is when we dive deep into the actual opponent, and I give you my prediction. Bo knows, welcome. We go to Frankie M. I doubt we fire Brian Kelly for another 2 years. A buyout is just too much. But I
want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
I think by that time, an interesting candidate could be Kelvin Shepherd. Thoughts? So it's interesting. I knew Kelvin in college. We're roughly the same age, and I've always liked Kelvin. Interviewed him a bunch of times. And on top of that, he has been phenomenal as the defensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions. And Aaron Glenn has not been great as the head coach. Quick story, I actually met Aaron Glenn in Vegas for the season opener between LSU and USC. Look, Kelvin Shepherd is going to be an NFL head coach. I don't think he wants to leave the NFL to come back to coach at the collegiate level with all the things that you need to do as a college coach. And he's been in the NFL way longer than he's been in college football. But yes, he'll be an NFL head coach before he actually, you know, gets brought up to be a college head coach. Do I think if LSU called him and said, "Hey Shep, here are the keys to the kingdom," he would probably say yes to that. Then you have to get into what's the price, because now you will see a shift towards programs not overpaying coaches. So if I have the chance of staying in the NFL as a defensive coordinator and being with an elite head coach in Dan Campbell, an elite fan base, which is the Detroit Lions, who love their coaches, I have a tough time seeing someone like Kelvin Shepherd making the move back to college football unless it's for a generational amount of money. Let's go to Brian, who is my new pick for the new offensive coordinator, wide receiver coach, and offensive line coach. Okay? That's a very good question. For the offensive line coach, it could just be basically anyone at this point. Not named Brad Davis. It's been that bad for me. And I like Brad as a recruiter, and it's just gotten to be where you need to find someone out there that is more proven. Same thing with wide receiver coach. I do think with wide receiver coach or offensive line coach, I would want the offensive coordinator, if we're replacing all three of these, I would want the offensive coordinator to actually pick who that person actually is. You know, for me, I do believe just by watching how segmented our team plays, I don't know if the coaches on the staff see eye to eye on everything. And that's not like totally non-normal. There's always egos in every single coaching staff room. But it just doesn't seem like this team plays together. I'm not saying that they don't play hard. I'm not saying that they don't play for one another. That's a different thing. And I'm not saying that the players don't care. It's just there's a lot of different moving parts that don't make a lot of sense. And, you know, we explained some of that in the film study yesterday, okay? Just simple, simple common sense stuff. Whereas if a defender is leveraged to the outside of the blocker, we don't want to run into the defender. We want to cut to where our blocking angles are better. That was something that happened at the end of the game this past weekend with Juwan Johnson. So you can go see the film study from yesterday as well. All right, we'll go along with the supers. Okay, I didn't miss any supers. I do think we did get a Venmo here. And appreciate you, Julie. Thank you so much. She says she's down on her Tigers right now. Okay. Now, I want to get into another criticism that I received personally. And these begin to rein in when the team is performing bad and film studies are overwhelmingly negative. Now, it is funny that when film studies are after wins, I don't get this comment. But when they're after losses, this is the most common thing that I get. Well, you didn't coach. You didn't play at a high level. What's your playing experience? Who is this dude? And my answer is always the following. I did not play at a high level. It's amazing. Like, I have never claimed to be the football czar. In fact, it's the opposite. I put a disclaimer in every single LSU film study that I do and a lot of different other film studies that it's impossible to know everything there is to know about a certain play. These are my best educated guesses because every piece of film analysis, whether it's me or Kurt Warner, it's a guess, okay? But people don't like it when you talk so negatively during a film study. And yesterday's film study in particular was very personal because we did a lot of stupid things. And it was more personal towards the coaching staff, if anything. And look, I'll say it a gazillion times. That's not my goal. My only thing I ask is if you say that, and I really do mean it, tell me the plays that you disagree with. Don't just say, hey, you didn't play at any high level. No shit. I'm 5'7", 190. I will never, ever claim that that's what I am or what I do. But tell me, in every comment section, I am totally fine to any criticism. Serious. But do it about a specific play or something that I said. I know I'm going to get a lot of stuff wrong because I'm not, like I say it a lot, it's almost a crutch. I'm not in a meeting room. Now, I will say, I've got to stop calling Josh Thompson Shanahan in every film study, but they're number 56. Their body types are the exact same. They play very similar. They both come from highly educated schools. Not saying LSU doesn't have a highly educated program. I'm an LSU graduate, but that deserves criticism because I keep doing it. So my apologies to the Thompson family, who some of the members I do know, and I appreciate the Thompson family for supporting some of the stuff that we've done. But the truth is, I will never, ever claim to know everything about every single play, okay? Just tell me what you disagree with. I'm genuinely curious. I also want to address something else, is that fans are starting to become, and before I get to KJ Kerbal's super chat, I have been in both of these spots. Okay, so I feel like I'm in a unique position to address this. The media of LSU has been heavily criticized. Heavily. The ones that actually go to the press conference are getting obliterated by you guys for not asking tougher questions. And I get it. So, as someone who has sat in many a press scrums, and as someone who has had plenty guests who go to every single one of these media settings, it is a lot harder to ask tough questions in a college market. Okay, we've had some of the reporters in here who have asked the tough questions. Do you think Michael Cobble enjoyed being the bullseye of everyone in the media world when Brian Kelly absolutely destroyed him after a game? No, I don't think he enjoyed that. That's not what he wants to do. Cobble's a positive guy. But, you know, I don't think you should be too critical of the people that actually go to the press conferences. Now, do I wish they asked different questions about certain things, yes, I do think questions could be a little bit more specific in nature. I've seen this at the NFL level. Reporters are getting more out of these press conferences when they actually ask about specific players and specific plays. Because if you ask vague overarching questions, that can lead to vague overarching answers. All right. So one question that I would love to be asked is, do you reevaluate the role of Harold Perkins in this defense? Okay. And this is a good question to ask. There was one LSU defensive player who played every single snap of both the Ole Miss and the Vanderbilt games, and that was Harold Perkins. Do you think about moving him? And this is a pertinent question because this has always been a debate. Where is Harold Perkins' best position on the field? So that's a good question. Also asking about specific plays. One specific play that honestly took two touchdowns off the board that had two very similar issues was the final play of the opening drive where you had to settle for a field goal, and the final play of the first half where we also had to settle for a field goal, where the same mistake happened two times in a row. Why was there an unblocked blitzer coming through the B gap? All right. So, you know, there was a really good breakdown done on this from Jacob Hester, who I know, and then Matt Flynn, who I don't know as well. They did a breakdown of these similar plays on LouisianaSports.net. Shout out to Chris Marler, the brains behind that whole operation. Kidding. But they themselves did a breakdown. I highly recommend you go check it out. But I'm trying to remember if they actually did that play. They did some other plays. They did a lot of the RPO stuff that a lot of LSU fans criticize. But my understanding is so much of that comes down to how that's actually taught and how that's actually checked. That would be a good question. Why is it that on both of those plays where you had really speedy receivers on safety nickel types running goes, both of those probably get completed for touchdowns if you pick up the B-gap blitz or if you slide the protection this way or that way or whatever. So I cover the NFL as well. A lot of reporters are doing that now. They're asking about specific plays. They go to the players, ask about that specific play. And it provides so much more clarity. It really does. So I am defending the LSU media. I think it's so much easier for us to sit and criticize all the people that go to the press conferences, while at the same time, not understanding how difficult it is to ask a tough question. It is so difficult. It is so difficult. Go. Start your own organization and go to the press conferences or track down Brian Kelly and ask him. Let's go to Cajun Curveball. Does BK know what time the game is this weekend? I hope so. I mean, he can't remember when the pressers are weekly. Just want to be sure the team is there. Yeah, does the team show up? I think it does. I do. All right. Like I said, this will be my final stance on my ball knowledge. On a scale of 1 to Bill Belichick when it comes to total football knowledge, or Kurt Warner or anyone that would be in the 9-10 range, all right, I am probably a 6.5 or a 7. That's it. Okay. Six and a half or seven. Brian says Colin Klein is the best offensive coordinator in the SEC. No. He's good, though. He's really good. And he'll be a head coach soon. I would be shocked if he's not a head coach after this year. Because Marcel Reed is good. He's not elite. That offense is so much fun to watch, though. It is so much fun to watch. They do a really good job with their run game. And look, this is an offensive line that, if I'm not mistaken, had one of their backups start for Alabama, and he's been fantastic. We were after Chase Besantis, one of their best guards. He's a good player. He's a really good player for them. So, yeah, Colin Klein's good. He's good. He's probably outside my top 5, though, in the SEC. I would say The Lane Weiss connection is definitely up there. I would say Bobby Petrino has been the best. I would also put Heupel there, the Sark operation, even though it's not going well. And then, look, I'm going to keep hammering this. I'm going to put Mike Bobo there. I did not think Georgia fans would come after me so much for my love of Mike Bobo. Georgia fans do not like that guy. They don't. Well, the ones that are vocal on social media do not like him. Let's go to Tiger Boy Luck. Atkins, for offensive coordinator. Look at Florida State in 2023, and he's an O-line coach. Bring Mickey Joseph back. Mickey was a very good wide receiver coach. I don't think, though, even though the Corey Raymond rehire has been really good for LSU, and obviously bringing Blake Baker back has been mostly good for LSU, I don't know if, let's just say Brian Kelly is retained, he wants to do that again, bring back someone from the old regime, even though Mickey Joseph is indeed really good. Now, as far as Alex Atkins as the offensive coordinator, do you give him a chance to call plays? Well, the better question would be, how much play calling experience does he actually have? You know, he was the offensive coordinator at Florida State, but to my understanding, it was Norvell that called the plays, and we've had a Florida State player on here multiple times who knows Alex Atkins. I would be open to that. I would, but I don't know. One of my biggest criticisms of Brian Kelly, though, is on the staff, there's just not a lot of play calling experience. And I do think, you know, one of my big weaknesses is I've never called plays before. I think when you're actually evaluating film or anything like that, I think experience as a play caller is more valuable than experience as a player or just experience as a coach, because so much of play calling comes down to timeliness and sequencing. And do you want to have an opening script, and how many plays do you want in that opening script? And then obviously adjusting your game plan as the flow goes on. That's why Brian Kelly, when he was asked about play calling duties, was very defensive of, hey, Joe Sloan's a guy. Play calling's an art. It's difficult. And play calling and game managing are two completely different things. Now, I will say this as a pretty big fan of Lane Kiffin, that makes me sick to my stomach to say, because he is indeed an Ole Miss Rebel. Other than the dirty secret that he was interested in LSU, Lane does a really good job of this. I mean, Lane does a hell of a job of this. So, you know, I want to shout out Jace Max. He's a consultant and editor for some of the short work that you've seen on here. And he watches a lot of YouTube. So he works with me now. And he noticed that in our Lane Kiffin breakdown leading into the LSU Ole Miss game, I spent a lot of time on it, a whole hell of a lot of time on it, learning about some of the plays that he's used from 2019 LSU and the Joe Brady Saints Brain Trust and so on and so on. And, you know, I reached out to someone with knowledge of Lane Kiffin that's worked with him as a staffer, if you will. One thing that was relayed to me is how clear he is with his operation, all the way down to how quickly the ball gets delivered back to the referee, how quickly his players are ready for the next play. It's more than just the hurry up. It's the knowledge that his players have. And then we get to this, all right? Between the headset, he is really good. And what's so funny is leading into the LSU game, I worked for at least a week trying to reach out to how the Ole Miss play calling operation actually works, just for Lane Kiffin to spill the beans in an interview with Kirk Herbstreit after the fact. And it is amazing how good he is at relaying with his offensive coordinator, hey, this is what we're going to do if it's fourth and two. This is what we're going to do if it's fourth and five. This is what we're going to do if it's this. And it's different than how he first started at Ole Miss, where it was just, we're going for it on fourth down every single time. And you could see some of the evolution he's had as a coach. So, you know, I say all of that because, well, that's a lot. Like, it's not easy doing that. He's had all this head coach experience, and he's had all this play calling experience about the NFL and the college level, and he's mastered the high level of communication that is required to be a coach. Now, this is coming off as a total Lane Kiffin glaze job, because the truth is, he did bungle his true chance at winning a national championship, which was last year. That team's not going to win the Natty. Now, Ole Miss still can, and by that team, I mean this year's team, they could still make the playoff. They can't win the Natty with this team. They just can't. Last year's team, I think they had a really good shot. They had a really good shot. They just choked. They beat everybody by double digits and lost every one possession game that they had. Shouldn't have lost to LSU, shouldn't have lost to Florida. It happens. And he choked it away. And some of that was on him. Some of that was his stubbornness with the running back position and all of that. But even though he has some faults, it's so hard to call plays. His sequencing is so great. So with Alex Atkins, how good would he be in this short a period of time? I think a lot of you want to at least see how he would do in a very short period of time, but I don't know how fair that would be to him. Let's go to AP. All right. I do want to spend some time on this. All right. I have a lot of thoughts about this, a lot, including to me. Okay, there's Jace Max right there. All right, coming up next, it's not going to be as rant driven. I'm gonna answer as many comments as I possibly can. But we do need to show some love to our supporters. But the redshirting thing is starting to piss me off.
Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of LeBourne Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at LeBourne Therapy worked hard to fix that back, your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, LeBourneTherapy.com, with locations in Carncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. LeBourneTherapy.com. L-A-B-O-R-D-E therapy.com.
PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit FortifiedGulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. LSUTigers.com. Let's go. Okay, so LSU is playing the redshirt game. And basically that means, hey, we're going to try to keep a backup's resume down to four games or less for 2025, which could lead to extra years of eligibility. They're doing that. Brian Kelly said this publicly. They're doing this with Jordan Gilbert and Ashton Stamps. They're both backups. They don't come close to actually playing. But, you know, when you do that, it gets kind of strange because on kickoff team, there's a lot of true freshmen that are playing on a unit that really doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot. Now, we gave up a bad kickoff return versus Vanderbilt, but we boot the ball out of the back of the end zone a lot. Now, a lot of those guys also play on punt team, but, you know, as a younger player, you know, their eligibility has been burned. So how do you go about managing that? How is it fair to this guy or that guy or whatever? Does it go by seniority? How does it work? Then, I am telling you right now, if there was one decision that makes me scream into the void more than anything else I have seen this year, okay, more than the Berrion Brown situation over this past weekend, fighting a player on the goal line, we're down by 10, we're knocking on the doorstep, which allowed Vanderbilt substitutions to happen. And then, obviously, we're very close. Our best player, our one big bright spot over the last couple of weeks, which is Tre'Davious Green. We're so close to him fumbling the football before he actually reached the goal line. Do you understand how furious you would be if that had actually happened? Your opinion of Tre'Davious Green would feel a lot different, okay? There's so many things from players to coaches. One thing I am glad, and it's amazing our run game has gotten better, we don't do the pistol outside zone thing anymore. That's been eradicated, and our run game's gotten better. Harlan Berry has helped with that as well. There's a lot of different things, a lot of different things that you could point to that you do not like. But the craziest thing is playing Kerryus Kern one snap versus Louisiana Tech. One snap. He played one United States snap. And now it's at the very least up for debate. Now that he's played in three total games, do you try and preserve his redshirt? It's weird. Okay, it's weird. Like, it's the same thing with Michael Van Buren. These are your two top backup options at two of the most critical positions in the sport. So, you, me, outside the building, don't know a gazillion percent how much redshirt conversation. I'm wearing a red shirt for this rant. See that? Actually, that wasn't a pun intended. I just happened to be wearing a red shirt. But it makes you wonder, hey, are we being held hostage for eligibility requirements and concerns and all of that? You don't know. You honestly don't know. And I've had the wrong bottom scroll on here. Someone could have told me to fix it. But yeah, it's frustrating, and I understand you want to do right by the player, want to do right by the team and all of it. But the one thing I would not have done, if you're thinking about redshirting a guy, is playing somebody one snap in a meaningless game. Go to Ryan, the stormtrooper himself. Carter Kelly's been doing this for 35 years. He knows a good team when he sees one. It's the attention to details in the process. Danny Girl, rare appearance from one of my favorite PHLers. I know why Danny Girl doesn't come around as much, is that we finally got a good center. And once we got a good center, Danny Girl said, sayonara. She was always here to talk about LSU's lack of great center play. Good to have you back. Let's go to Ant, who was on with us last Thursday, one of the rising stars in media. I'm a little shocked you're in here on Pelicans opening night. The problem with me is that there's no threat of competition to the starters if they know their backup is getting redshirted and can't play more than four games. Exactly. Which is why I am, you know, in these mop-up duty games, I was pro playing Colin Hurley over Michael Van Buren. I'm serious. I was, even though Van Buren's only played in one game. So you have a little bit more flexibility than you do with Kern if you're trying to do the redshirt thing. But yeah, it's a weird debate. It's a weird debacle. It's a weird thing to handle. I don't know. I don't know, LA Mom. I really, really, really don't know. But it's crazy to do that. Like, it's really crazy to do that. And basically, what I would do before every season, just to have clarity, and you can have some flexibility with this, but when it comes to redshirting or not redshirting, your top backup quarterback needs to be ready at all times and cannot be redshirted. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about DJ Chester at left tackle. I'm fine with it. All things considered, I'm fine with it, knowing our situation right now. A&M, as a lot of us know, always have great defensive ends and defensive linemen. Obviously, you look at their defensive line now. DJ Hicks 5 is solid. It's just a solid group. We'll talk more about them on Thursday. Torian York might be the best defensive player we play all season. He is that good, number 21. He's just good. He's like, I wish he's not like spectacular. Like, he's not going to Tyrann Mathieu you or you know, even Whit Weeks has splashier plays, but he's just a freaking good tackle football player. And his football IQ is through the roof. He reads the game better than, as good, if not better than any defensive player I've seen in the SEC. He just knows ball. Okay. I've never heard him speak, but he's going to be a great coach or a great film study guy. Way better than me. Look, I am in a spot to where I am worried we do not score more than 21 points versus A&M. Because as good as this LSU defense has been at home, this will be by far the best offense we have played in Tiger Stadium. Also, as much as it pains me to say it, out of any film study I've done this year, any rants that I've done this year, my criticism of the LSU defense after the Ole Miss game was definitely the one that got the most angry messages, emails, response, comments, because it's always the, well, why are you spending any time talking about the defense when it's the offense that's the problem? And I hate to feel vindicated after that, after the Vanderbilt game. I hate to be that person. But the LSU defense just is, I mean, I would say they're probably top two or three defense still in the SEC, but they're not as good as we thought they were going to be. Especially with how we have played in the first couple of games. Now, one change can fix it. And it's just not playing Harold Perkins every snap. As crazy as playing Kerryus Kern one snap in a game actually was, it's even crazier to have watched the Ole Miss tape and Harold Perkins play the full allotment of snaps in that game per PFF and then decide to do the same thing versus Vanderbilt when you know that they really like throwing to tight ends and short, easy completions in the intermediate, which is where you can really attack an outside backer in space. And that's exactly what they did. That is exactly what they did. And I really do think if they make that change, move them inside or just use them in rotational dime packages, which is how I felt before the season even began, a lot of this would be fixed because structurally, it does not make a lot of sense. You know, I brought this up in the film study, but someone else on Twitter, I think it's Rosen Will, I retweeted it earlier, was making the same exact observation. The way the defenses work now, if you put him out in space, he's obviously in a tough matchup versus a slot receiver or a tight end. So if you don't want him in space, you then have to move him inside, and then you have to bring a safety down to actually guard that receiver. And that puts you in a static single high alignment, which basically takes away one defender in the pass, especially when Perk, which happens often, I don't know how it's taught, he just runs. He just leaves wide open pockets of space in the defense. And you decided to do it for an entirety of a game yet again, like you did from Ole Miss to where we were versus Vanderbilt. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to do that. Like, I will always say this. You do not want to give teams wide open completions. Like, make them have to earn those completions. You know, one team I've always shown a lot of love to is Tennessee. I've always felt Tennessee is a really well-coached team. If you watched what happened versus Alabama this weekend, their defense did not play bad. There was 9 offensive points. There was a pick six and they gave up a safety. Then the throws that Ty Simpson were making were mostly in tight coverage. And their receivers were making obscenely difficult plays. Were there some wide open busts? Yeah, there were some of that, in particular towards the end of the game. But the one thing I appreciated from Tennessee is that they made it hard. They made it hard on the offense to succeed. The problem for the LSU defense now is with the best corner in college football, not my opinion. It's not my opinion. It is my opinion, but people smarter than me are saying that. Cam Meller is saying that. Jordan Reed is saying that. People that actually run the tape, No Flags Film, James Foster is saying that. Delane's the best corner in college football. Well, how is it that you have a guy that is completely shutting down one portion of the field and an aspect of every single offense, you're still getting the ball run up and down the field on you in the 2 games versus offenses that actually have a pulse? It's a problem. Yeah, I would do that. Try it. Try it. Like, it's crazy to me. And look, maybe if you just do use them just situationally and just try Devon Keys, West Weeks, and a traditional nickel, let Spears be in the base package instead. Maybe it works. Maybe it works. But I cannot tell you how many times, in particular in the Ole Miss game, it just kind of gets swept under the rug because, well, you know, the offense was so bad in that game. We just struggled getting lined up. We really did. It does. It does. Like, I spent so much time talking about the defense because we knew the offense stunk. It wasn't a shock that the LSU offense wasn't great versus Ole Miss. It was a little bit of a culture shock when Ole Miss did what they did versus us. Now, the truth is, Georgia's defense also got lit up by Ole Miss's defense, and Georgia was at home. And Ole Miss is a good offense. Don't get it twisted. It's just if you go watch, guys are just running wide open. Bengal Tiger. Is this on three in the chat? Will Campbell's a generational talent. I agree with that. Actually, it's funny you bring that up. I did my first Will Campbell NFL film study today on Power Hour NFL. And he's so good. That's not really a shock to anybody, but he's so good. Obviously, there's some rookie mistakes mixed in there, but damn, we are missing him. We are missing him. But that's the crazy thing about it is 2023, you had the best quarterback in college football. 2024, you had the best left tackle in college football. 2025, you had the best corner in college football. You can have all these things and still be very good at some of these other positions. 2023, you had the best wide receiver in college football. F the Marvin Harrison truthers out there. You can have all these different things, but college football will be a weak link sport. It always is. It used to not be that way. But now it is all about your weak links. Let's go to Frankie Bands. Welcome to the channel, Frankie Bands. We want a coach that knows LSU culture. Oh, man. Let's have a discussion about the culture thing. Because I don't know anyone out there that would look at Jay Johnson and say, you know what, he's Cajun. And, you know, Kim Mulkey's obviously a Louisianian, so... I feel like the culture thing could be a little too narrative based. You know, Nick Saban's from the North, obviously. You know, Lee Feinsvog. Dude, I want to know what's up with Lee Feinsvog. I've always loved Lee Feinsvog. He was a Baton Rouge media member. I really don't know what the latest is with him. I don't know. Lee Feinsvog is the ultimate Dale Brown historian. Okay. And Dale Brown is from North Dakota. I believe I saw Hunt Palmer tweet out a few other coaches as well. Guys that are from different areas of the country having success here at LSU. It's just in reality, Brian Kelly has just not been that good. He was a college football Hall of Famer at Notre Dame. And now he's just not been that good at LSU with better quarterback play than what he ever had at Notre Dame. Okay. Now, I do want to talk about a few positives. All right. Now, this is going to be a little bit of a weird positive for me that, and I actually went against his, this is my favorite analytical Twitter account. His name is Parker Stats of War. I've talked about him quite a bit on here. Okay. He tweeted out an offensive quality drive chart. And what you'll see, and I'll just do the Cliff Notes version of this chart just for you guys listening that aren't able to see it. And we appreciate the iTunes, Spotify. Even if you don't listen, drop a five-star review. I know a lot of you just like to watch on YouTube because we like to do a lot of visual stuff. So you could see our quality drive rate is at 47%. But our points per quality drive is really low. We have the lowest points per quality drive rate in college football. It's a jarring chart. Now, you notice the teams that we play are teams that we will play in the next couple of weeks, including Vanderbilt, they have the same, roughly the same amount of quality drives, but they score 4 more points on average per quality drive than we do. Now, what is the definition of a quality drive? I don't know. But what I can tell you is the chart matches what exactly is wrong with LSU. And to me, the biggest thing, if you want to get an overarching film, specific thing that you could point to about LSU, is that we suck in the red zone. We flat out stink it up when it comes to the most critical portion of the field. And the reason why the points per quality drive chart is very important is that Garrett Nussmeier is mostly a good quarterback from our own 20 to the opposing team's 35-yard line. I think if you pull up a stat like red zone percentage and touchdown percentage, it shows that we suck there. But that doesn't go deep enough. Where LSU really sucks is the extended red zone, the 35-yard line on in. So the reason why I wanted to show you that chart is that when you expand the data set to just outside the red zone, it gets way worse. It gets way, way, way worse when it comes to our success rate, touchdowns, turnovers, all those different things. Now, why is that the case? Well, it's a few things. Number one, so much of red zone success comes down to the quarterback and run. That it honestly is that. So let's use the most famous example of a great LSU offense, which is 2019 LSU. Okay. Go look at the games that were actually close, the games where it was truly in the balance. Alabama, Joe Burrow, huge run at the end of the game to seal it. Auburn, Joe Burrow, huge touchdown run to seal it. Clemson, his rushing was a difference in that game. Running at the quarterback position is a big deal when it gets into the red zone. And obviously, we don't need to talk about number 5 in that aspect. It answers a lot of different questions when it comes to design plays or non-design plays. The best red zone offense in college football, actually one of the best red zone offenses I've watched in recent years, is Georgia. Red zone, extended red zone, why are they good? Because Gunnar Stockton is one hell of a runner. He is a very, very, very good runner. And Mike Bobo is really creative with his red zone actions. You know what Mike Bobo did in the red zone versus Ole Miss? He attacked Zay Dryan. Seriously, that's what he did. And he also did a good job showing different actions throughout the game and marrying those actions with a variety of play calls. Okay, so here's a good example of what he did. Versus Kentucky, they ran an end around to their wide receiver number 86, Dylan Bell. So all those teams watched that and they saw Dylan Bell had a reverse touchdown in the red zone. So what he's done in these past two games is use Dylan Bell as a decoy, and it's got them 3 touchdowns just based on that action. So he does a really good job of sequencing and setting different things up to get walk-in touchdowns for his team. We don't do that. We run lower percentage plays, such as all verts, and we don't give Garrett enough short options to work out of. And when we do, Garrett does force it. The Ole Miss example, probably should have thrown it underneath the Bauer Sharp. Instead, he threw a YOLO ball into very heavy coverage. Okay? You have got to be able, especially if you don't have a quarterback who can run, you've got to have a red zone bag. It's difficult. They call it the toughest portion of the field for a reason. But that's why it's very important to bring up the extended red zone as well. It is very important because it undersells how big of a problem it actually is. And then you get into the defensive side of the football when it comes to the red zone. How many walk-in touchdowns have you seen? And walk-in conversions in the red zone have you seen this year by LSU? Well, we'll go through a few of them. Clemson, game-tying touchdown. Kate Klubnik missed two wide-open guys on those final plays. One was pretty egregious. Okay, we won the game. No big deal. Let's go on to a few other games. Well, Florida never really got into the red zone. The one touchdown they had, it was a very common play that's run in red zones, but at least we had coverage. They completed a difficult pass. They ran the double China 7, and they were able to score a touchdown. Then we go to Ole Miss. Into the first half, what happened? They had a 4th-and-1 pitch and catch into the flat. Okay, guess what they did? On the goal line play, with the timeout in our pocket, 15 seconds left to go in the half, what happened? The simple rollout play that every team does on the left hash out of a timeout in the red zone. Nobody was there. Game on the line, 4th-and-short, what happened? Same thing. It's a little flip into the flat. The closest, we had defenders closer to coffee call in Baton Rouge than Harris or number 8. I keep calling him Harris, and it's right. He's the best tight end in the country. To me, he's been the best. Him or Stowers. Speaking of Stowers, let's talk about the red zone touchdowns and conversions versus Vanderbilt. We go back to the play we broke down, and that Rosin Will. Will Rosen, I think that's his name, broke down today on Twitter. We give Diego Pavia an easy one-on-one with his best tight end, Stowers, versus Devon Keyes. It's a very simple read. Then the touchdown was a Diego Pavia scramble right up the gut all the way to the one, and then they banged it in after that. Okay? The other Diego Pavia touchdown, a 20-yard scramble untouched into the end zone. Then the other touchdown on the goal line. A little flip to the tight end, wide open, okay? Then the other touchdown before the flip to the tight end, a nice tight end leak play that gets everybody fooled, but it was wide the frick open. So, you know, you hear me say that all the time, but one thing that is just completely ruined the Brian Kelly era for me is it's not necessarily that we've been bad on defense, which is true. We've had a lot of bad defensive seasons under Brian Kelly. 2023 was really bad. We all know that. 2024 was better, but still really bad. A lot of that was a talent deficiency. Then in 2025, we spent all this money to get the talent up. We're still really good defensively. But the one underlying thing, statistically and just based on film, is that it's the ease in which things happen. Okay, honestly, you could do this for yourself. You don't need to know anything about film. Okay, and this helps me as someone that did not play at a high level. When you watch games, ask yourself, hey, how difficult was it for them to pick up those yards? How many coverage busts or just guys running wide open? Remember, we could talk all we want about the lack of talent on last year's team, but per SEC StatCast numbers, LSU was the worst yard before contact defense when it came to the running game in his site's history. So one thing about BK is that the ease in which things happen to us defensively is a problem. And then the inverse of that is also true offensively. How often do you see easy completions and easy conversions with the LSU offense over the past couple of seasons? We saw Garrett's superpower. Garrett is one of the best third and long quarterbacks we have ever seen in college football. But how can you survive schematically as an offense with so many difficult third and long conversions? You can. So You don't need to know film to know that. So then the question becomes, what about other teams in the SEC? How easy are their conversions? How many easy walk-in type of things that you see? Well, not a whole lot, because the players are good and the coaches are good in the SEC, but it's more than what we have. Let's go to Dane, big supporter of me, big supporter of Blake Ruffino, and I appreciate that. Dane says, Carter, firing a coach and promoting a coordinator has worked for schools before. It worked for a while under Coach O, and Tennessee promoted Fulmer after firing Majors. LSU could promote Blake Baker. I do think Blake Baker is a very talented coach. There is a piece of me that thinks he actually would be better served as a head coach based on his connectivity with players and based on his upward trajectory as a coach. And he's dealt for a young coach with failures. Even though I've been critical of him, I was very pro Blake Baker when he was hired. Was it expensive? Yeah, sure. But, you know, he was really good at Missouri. And, you know, I don't know what all he's dealing with in terms of what Brian Kelly wants him to do. Based on my understanding, though, is that Brian Kelly does give him quite a bit of autonomy as a defensive coordinator. And I know he says that publicly, but I've been told that it actually is true that Brian Kelly lets Blake Baker do what he wants to do. The one thing I would say, though, and I know I keep going back to the Harold Perkins thing, but it's just true structurally how much it has hamstrung us in these games versus competent offenses. You know, I think it's time to scrap the operation when it comes to that. Or wait till Whit Weeks comes back and see if it'll work again. Because it's tough when you and the story goes that Blake went to Harold and say, hey, what position do you feel the most comfortable playing? And he said star. And it's worked some. It's just a hard thing to do in an every down operation versus teams that run more spread out stuff. It's hard. But as far as Blake Baker being the next LSU head coach, I would not be totally opposed to it. I'm serious. I would not be totally opposed to it. Number one, it would not be absurdly expensive to do that. You would have an idea of what it was like. You would have a guy that is for sure locked into a dream job scenario. A guy you know relates with players, gets along with players. And I say I know that. I don't know a gazillion percent. I don't talk to too many players, but I talk to a few that love him, one of which was on the channel before the season, Mr. Jack Pyburn, and you can listen to what he had to say about Blake Baker, okay? I could also tell you of a player who used to play for Blake Baker who beyond reasonable doubt, adores him. And if you dug deep enough into the PHL archives, you would figure out who that is. And he doesn't play on LSU. He doesn't. And he still adores him. So, you know, I wouldn't be totally opposed to doing something like that. And a lot of that would come down to who his OC would be. Yeah, Ryan, I think the players like BK. I do. It was fine, Pegasus. It's kind of like the same thing with Garrett. It was better than what we've seen up to this point. All right, we'll take a few more. Don't forget, I'll be on with the great Blake Ruffino here in just a few moments. Ghost, thank you for the repost. I appreciate that. John Summerall from Tulane. I do think John Summerall, and once again, take this for what it's worth. I'm not Pete Nakos or anyone like that. He has a high likelihood of being a coach in the SEC next year. Okay. I will also say that based on what I've heard, he's put feelers out there that he wants to take that leap. I'll tell you this. I don't know if I'd leave Tulane if I'm John Summerall. Because those alternate Tulane uniforms that were dropped today, with the NOLA tile on the side of the helmet, are you kidding me? Dan Mullen to call plays? Yeah, that'd be fun. I was pro Kubiak being the next head coach of the Saints. Pin, good to see you. All right, y'all. Dane, I really appreciate you. Could Brian Kelly still get to 10-3? Yeah. Brian Kelly's been really good in Tiger Stadium. Alexander said Will Campbell got worse from year two to year three. I don't think that's true. I don't. Samuel's ready to be heard again. I'll see you at the tailgate on Saturday. I'll be there in spirit. I think I'm sending one of my soldiers to your tailgate. One of my guys got to come drink your booze, eat your food. Yeah, I don't know. And this would be, and we'll talk more about this on tomorrow's stream. I was going to save it for tomorrow. But Pierce brought it up. One thing you might see as a change for me going forward with this roster is I will probably be a little bit more lenient on player criticism compared to the coaches. I will be completely honest with you, and I really do mean this, and people really close to me know this. Criticizing DJ Chester has gotten to be very uncomfortable for me. It honestly has, because I was so vocal about the idea of him not being the center this past year. Then, you know, even though he was taking first team reps during the spring, it was pretty obvious it was still going to be Braylon Moore. But, you know, I don't always trust everything. And I was like, man, this is crazy. We're giving DJ Chester so many starting center reps when it was what it was last year. And then he has this one really bad left tackle rep where his foot did get caught up in the turf, but it was nasty. He got put on his ass and, you know, people are destroying him. And I'm part of it. You know, I've destroyed him plenty of times. But I've always wanted it to be clear that it's not his fault that he was bad last year, but we never actually gave anyone else a chance to be the center. He played 900 snaps last season, which is so hard to do. There's running backs on rosters who played three full seasons as a rotational guy who does not play 900 snaps during the course of a season. And we never gave DJ Chester a break. We never gave him a rest. And now he was named to the leadership council by the Southeastern Conference. And he's had to be ready to play all of the five positions on the offensive line. And now he's filling in at left tackle for Tyree Adams when there's all these injuries. And he's not really that good, but he's going out there and fighting his ass off. That's not his fault. That is not his fault. That's on the coaches. Okay? It is his fault, in that he's struggling because you do control a lot of what you do, but it's not his fault that he's being chosen to play and go out there and struggle. So there's a lot of that, okay? The Harold Perkins criticism tonight from me and in the film study, a lot of it is on Blake Baker. It's kind of the same thing with the DJ Chester thing. Why, when Harold Perkins played the game that he played versus Ole Miss, why would he play every single snap when it was clear there wasn't a gazillion percent effort on every play? He might be tired. He might be mentally and physically exhausted. You've got to find a rotation. You've got to give someone else a chance. All right? It's coaching. So if you notice over the next couple of weeks that I change up how, you know, I've always never really just totally hammered any one player outside of a few instances, in particular more experienced players. Obviously, the Berrion Brown instance was a pretty obvious instance of where I went in on a guy. But the truth is, a lot of this is coaching, a lot of this is development, and a lot of it is structure. A lot of it. Okay, what's up, Odyssey? Vigo, good to see you. All right, I'll be on with the great AYS Sports right now. So we'll see you over there. And big shout out to all our partners, Fortify Gulf Coast, Zion Imaging, and our friends at Laborde Therapy. Okay, we'll be back live tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Central. And there you go. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight. Let's see. What are we doing? I have a choice tonight. I have leftover pizza or I have pork chops. So I don't know why we had the balloons. Tag me on Twitter. The first person to tag me on Twitter at PowerHourLSU or Instagram. Should I go with pizza or pork chops? You guys let me know. Our super chat is for tonight. Bo knows. Frankie, Brian, Cajun, LA Mom, Tiger Boy, RSX, and Dane. Peace and love. Last hot take of the night is not a football one. I'm praying to the dear Lord that Tony Vitello stays in the SEC. Let's go.